Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is Pop Culture Confidential, and I'm Christina Yerling Biru. Hey everyone, welcome to Pop Culture Confidential. We are smack in the middle of award season. The strikes are over, the Oscar race is scorching hot, and I get to welcome back my favorite band of movie lovers, writers, and critics who occasionally let me be the third wheel on different shows and at Telluride. From Awards Watch, Editor-in-Chief Eric Anderson. Hi, Eric.
Hello, Christina. You're not the third wheel. There's four of us. You're the fourth wheel that keeps the car rolling.
Oh, that made me happy. Executive editor Ryan McQuaid.
I brought my banjo for this band. I hope everyone else has their instruments ready. Thank you, Christina, for having us back on.
Thank you. And Sophia Simonello, of course, associate editor. So nice to see you. I've missed you, Sophia, and everyone
else. Nice to see you, too. I've missed you, too. I'm very happy to be back and to start talking about award season, I think, in a really real way now.
We're going to dive into Oscar nomination predictions. But first, Sophia, what surprised you the most about reactions to films that we saw at Telluride now a couple months later?
Well, I mean, I think that the Elordi in the room really is Saltburn, because I mean, you and I, Christina, we saw it twice in like, what, 12 hours, right? At Telluride.
Yep.
And we're just like very swept up in it. And I guess it's not necessarily super surprising that people are reacting to it in the way that they are. I think that when it came out, we weren't necessarily expecting any kind of universal praise. I think that Emerald Fennell is a button pusher. And I think
same
that she
as last
that.
Time, promise.
And yeah, exactly. But I think one of the things that I've learned or kind of observed from the reactions to this movie, which some of them are just so extreme and totally unwarranted, in my opinion, for this film. But one of the things I've noticed is how beneficial it is to see a film first without any of the hype, without anyone telling you, you know, how crazy it is, how exciting it is, what that experience is like. The benefit of going in blind and in being in the room, you know, with the filmmaker and having all of that excitement around it. So I have watched it since quite a few times and I still love it as much as I did then. So my opinion hasn't really changed on it, but I can't say I'm fully surprised, but I am a little bit surprised, I think, in just the complete vitriol that I've seen towards it and towards her online. Yeah.
Eric, what surprised you? What happened to Bike Riders, the first film we saw together?
I know. It's so crazy and so strange that Disney would not only, you know, pick it up from its premiere date, but just abandon it entirely and sell it off. It was a bit of a surprise. That part was a pretty big surprise. But, you know, that's Focus Features gain, depending on how you see the film. I was not a fan, but I think it will have its fans. That was strange. But I'll definitely echo Sophia that Saltburn is the movie of the season that people have put their targets on. And to Sophia's point about seeing something early or first, there definitely is a benefit to that. But what happens then too is by the time we get to a release, and it's had several other festival screenings and Q&As and kudos and a social media campaign that I think had its heart in the right place, but ultimately I think did a pretty big disservice to it. I mean, it was funny because at first they were a little unwilling to to go by some of the descriptions that we were giving it at Telluride. They held back a little bit, but then a month or two later, they were just full on with, you know, orgy and horny, and just really embraced all of that. And I think we're in this weird place where tweets and letterboxed comments are becoming the dialogue that studios are using for their movies. I don't know. I know it makes me feel a little bit old school to say that, but I think I get the idea. They're trying to hit a target audience. But in this case, it was a pretty big failure. Box office wise, it did very poorly. It'll probably do less than Promising Young Woman. But yeah, worse has been the backlash because it was so violent in its language. And yes, every time a movie like this comes out, we see how much people hate women, like truly, like to their core. And definitely was the case with this and Fennell. And, you know, it's happened to other female directors this year, Nita Costa.
Yeah, she's not
too.
The only one.
But yeah, the language and the hatred was so intense for it. Divisive is fun. Divisive can be pretty great. And an extremely well-worded negative review is a wonderful thing to read by somebody that is intelligent and cogent with their words. There was not a lot of that with the negative things that I read, because I read a lot of them because there's a lot of smart things. Sophia's review is wonderful and genius, and I want to read the opposite of that, but that's on the same level, and there really wasn't much to be had in those negative reviews.
Hasn't really come out yet broadly, but what do you think is going to be the reactions to Poor Things?
I'm anticipating that being the next,
level. Yeah. And I mean, Eric and Sophia kind of hit all the right points on Saltburn, but I wanted to even take it a little bit further, is that there were a lot of people that had divisive comments about Promising Young Woman. And so you kind of wonder about the disingenuousness of them going into a movie like this that is supposed to provoke reaction, that is supposed to have a conversation, and you're supposed to meet her as a writer and director in the middle to have those conversations. And people just refused to, because whether it was that movie was so polarizing, the online reactions or the fan base to it, the Oscar campaign, the Oscar wins, whatever it may be, it felt like, and also the fact that she was at like 700 festivals, and it's like, and Sophia and I had a running joke of like, oh, Fennell's here. So like that movie was everywhere, and it played really well with a lot of audiences. It was at Fantastic Fest. I think it was at Mill Valley too, right, Eric? And it was at,
yeah.
And it was at,
and that's all old people. That's like a sea of blue hairs.
Yeah, and they really liked
there.
It. But when it got to this point, when it got to the online film bros of it all, they probably will never understand what an obsessive relationship like this in the movie is depicted feels like, you know, because they'll never be in one. Then potentially they have a little bit of a divisive reaction to it. But I still think the movie is great. And I think that with the Nia DaCosta stuff as well too, about the Marvels and this ongoing conversation about how we give passes to male directors for missteps or for divisive films, and yet we refuse not to. I mean, there's already conversations about the sex scenes in Poor Things and how they're being depicted. There's a lot of conversations about how do you even ask questions of that, because some people don't know how to ask questions about that. So it's going to be really interesting when that movie goes wide, how people react to it, because I think it's a really good film. I think we all think it's a pretty good film, but yeah, people online.
I'm anticipating reactions to that.
Yeah. The pulling of the letterbox quotes too is just driving me nuts too. Those aren't reviews. Those aren't actual criticism. They're fans. And it just is propping up an organization that really doesn't filter out all their stuff. And it's just, it's no different than Twitter. Like there are people that blood, sweat, and tears do a lot of great work in this industry, and they write great reviews, both good or bad, depending on the film and what they like, and they're not getting the opportunities or the visibility as somebody who has a couple of thousand Twitter followers and Letterboxd followers, but they're online constantly and are being, you know, the object of these stupid studios. So maybe these studios should take a look back at how they're really marketing these films, because Saltburn was, there was a lot of social media campaigning rather than actual reviews from real critics being used. And I think that might've hurt them a little bit too.
What's the movie out of Telluride that would, that's been the big success?
Oh, I mean, I think it's now it hasn't fully, well, it just came out, I guess, but I think it's probably The Holdovers, because I think The Holdovers universally has been the most acclaimed and liked film. I haven't heard a lot of people really hate it. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of diverse.
There's a few, but there they don't need few, to be mentioned.
Yeah, no.
But not many to start an outcry online, you know. No. And I think that we've seen it with Divine Joy Randolph today, getting the New York Film Critics Association Best Supporting Actress. The film is going to have a pretty strong leg, and it's, I, you know, it's a fairly safe pick to say, but it's also a really good movie, and it's really funny because, like, Eric, it took him like 3 festivals to finally see it, and then he finally watched it and he really liked it. You know what I mean?
I know. So, I so regret putting it off at Telluride because I loved it so much. And yeah, I would have loved to love it early.
It's the right way to do a piece
but
of
you
nostalgia,
were watching Naiad twice. I mean,
well, you know,
just keep swimming, baby.
Someone's got to keep on swimming. Yeah.
Well, I think in addition to The Holdovers, so it wasn't a world premiere at Telluride, but Anatomy of a Fall has really stuck around. I think after the Gotham Awards and then today with the New York Film Critics Circle, like it picking up screenplay at the Gothams and then today international feature, even though it's not France's selection. I think that if critics keep pushing it, if it really sticks around and Neon pushes it, then it could make, you know, appearances here or there in different categories.
Yeah, Neon was actually great the day that it didn't get picked. They put ads up for all the other, like, you know, picture, director, screenplay, actress in a way that was just like wonderfully and exactly how to, you know, to counter. And that isn't, you know, that Taste of Things isn't fantastic, but it's definitely, critics are clearly going to be backing Anatomy in a bid for something more than, you know, what it would be able to get. I do want to say about Poor Things, though, because that went right from Venice to Telluride just within days, and that response has been pretty fantastic, and it opens in limited in like a week. I definitely see a lot of dumb conversation happening around that, around sex and sexuality. Certainly the ridiculous Gen Z puritans are going to have a hissy fit with the sex that's in it. But at the end of the day, when you have Eric Weber, Grace Randolph, and Lights, Camera Jackson as your detractors, I don't think there's a better argument for your movie than that. And I mean, if I was Searchlight, I would be promoting those negative comments as a way to promote the film, because they're horrible people and they're hated people.
But they are our finest film critics, to be fair.
And, so all it needs is Armin White for the Fourth Horseman.
Oh, that's coming. Yeah, that's coming.
I do think when Poor Things comes out, Saltburn and the criticism around that will be forgotten. It will quickly become eclipsed by Poor Things, because that is that takes the raunch up a notch, I would say.
Yes.
Eric, what are some of the things that distinguish this Oscar season in 2023?
From last year or just general previous years?
Yeah.
I'm trying to find the movie or the couple of movies that are going to be feel like more Oscar picks than critically raved stuff, because when you look at the general full list of nominees in any given year, best picture or otherwise, the reviews for most of them are really, really good. There's a lot of crossover between the Oscars and critical response. It's not, it isn't the huge separation that I think people want it to be or say that it is all the time. It does obviously happen when a win of something that is, you know, pretty low on a critic scale wins over something that isn't. But I'm trying to think of titles that have a real shot at major nominations and major wins that have, you know, a lot of low critic scores, and I don't quite see it. Everything that I think is going to get in and do well are huge hits with critics. Maybe, I mean, if Naiad does like any type of nomination damage, that might be close, but then not really, because if you really look at those numbers, it's like an 86 on Rotten Tomatoes. That's also another thing, is the perception of something being bad versus the actuality of it being bad. Because I mentioned Naiad specifically because there is a lot of like funny commentary about it, including us. We've made fun of it. But when you look at hard numbers, it doesn't back up the way that sometimes people think a movie or a performance is bad. And I think that's one of the things when we're talking about predicting too, that gets in the way from people all the time, is that I don't think that's going to get in because it's a bad performance. Like, no, you think it is, but you're not looking past, you know, yourself and what the reality is.
So Ryan, do you think, or do you also agree that, do you see anything losing momentum?
No, not at this moment. At this moment, I still have the film that I had at Telluride at number one, still number one. I still have everything kind of in place because we haven't seen a lot yet. I mean, obviously we had the Gothams in New York, and you know, that sort of I think that helps in terms of like campaigns and nominations for sure. Something like Charles Melton for May, December, it's been a huge boost so far. It is really interesting. We've had two international winners already, and they've both gone to Anatomy of a Fall, which won't contend at all for that Oscar. So really good job, France, smooth move. But no, I mean, we saw today with New York that Killers of the Flower Moon, which is a front runner, won best film, and Christopher Nolan, who is the front runner for best director, won. There were some prizes like Franz Rozsgowski for Passages, and but then Lily Gladstone won for best actress. So nothing has really changed my mind just yet. I still have, if we're going to spoil, I guess, our predictions, but I still have Oppenheimer in the one spot for picture and director at this point. I think it could do something really, we talked about Everything Everywhere All at Once having a very historic year last year based off of where it's at in the tech categories, how strong it is in something like supporting actor, how strong it is in something like adapted screenplay and director and picture. If it all just lays out like that and they just go across the board and absolutely love it, like I think that they will, I think that they could have a really, really solid day. That being said, I still yet to figure out what that second film just is yet. I know that there's a movie like American Fiction and Barbie and Poor Things and Killers of the Flower Moon, and they're all being discussed, but yet I have not seen the full path just yet. And Eric always tells this to me and to Sophia about your predictions have to tell a story, your predictions have to tell a path, and you have to find that path. Mm-hmm. And if Oppenheimer loses a couple, like a supporting actor or screenplay, its path is still there in the text and Nolan and director to still do it. It would be interesting to see what other films win those categories. maybe like Gosling and then an original screenplay, or, you know, maybe Poor Things and Emma Stone or something like that. But as of right now, I don't see another path, but it's early and it develops. Right. Those things develop over time. And so I'm not actually really confident in this Oppenheimer pick because it's my favorite film of the year. And I never had my favorite film of the year win. Last time that happened was Moonlight. And so I'm a glutton for punishment. And especially at this point in the stage, because last year we all thought Fablements was going to win. The year before, you know, I guess a bunch of people thought No Man's Land was going to win, but people had like Mank or Power of the Dog or, you know, whatever, Belfast. So, and those didn't happen. So it's kind of really nervous to put a front runner out here and be so confident with it, but it's a movie that's made $900 million. And its home video releases right now are insane.
Yeah.
And the fact that it is sold out across America and no other film, including Barbie, can say that. You know what I mean? Which is the other?
You're
which
such
is the
a
film
shady
that
bitch.
We don't kidding. Need to compare it to Barbie. All
I'm
the
just
time.
Saying.
Oh my God!
We just don't need
they're
to.
The only two film. They're the only two films that have 4K releases on. I'm just saying, you know.
Get this bro off the podcast.
That's a good segue to get into nominations. But first, I just have to say, this is such an incredible film year. The past two, American Fiction was brilliant. And May December has been rattling in my head since I saw it. And it's such a twisted, incredible film about relationships and marriage. And Maestro, I mean, God, that's also incredible. And all the films we've been talking about, surprising and shocking and all those things that you want in a movie year.
It's a spectacular year. I love this year. I love every year. I think there's, you know, always great movies every year. I am so excited for this year, but we have had, there's just so little left, like, you know, that's kind of really unseen, but I love this year.
Yeah. I think what I like about this year as well is that it isn't shaping up to be a year that really annoys me, which is really nice because there isn't a villain out there that I hate. Like in previous years, you know, where I've loved the movies, like I love Drive My Car, I loved Licorice Pizza, The Power of the Dog. I mean, there were some serious stinkers out there that came in and ruined the day for me. And this year we don't really have that, which is nice. Like I genuinely, when I look at the list of possibilities, I mean, I haven't seen The Color Purple yet. That'll change tomorrow. But all of the movies that I've seen, I've genuinely enjoyed some more
Sophia,
than others, of course, but
all I can say is just keep swimming.
Yeah. It's a good life motto.
It is. I also like it when people, you know, stick by the things that they say they like and don't switch midstream because the tide, the awards tide has changed.
Coming though, you know, it's coming.
It's coming.
What's that switch going to be, Sophia?
I think it'll be on Oppenheimer for sure. And Killers of the Flower Moon. The front runners usually are the ones that get it right.
I don't know about that. But I can't wait for the people that are going to be like, Killers and Oppenheimer will split votes. A thing that doesn't actually exist.
It doesn't
exist. That's coming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I was going to say Oppenheimer, I can see as being kind of the big one. I think that anytime, you have a front runner that like people genuinely loved because it came out earlier, right? Too, like it came out in July before people really, I think, knew how well it would do. Not so much in terms of award season, but in terms of box office, like people were doubting it. That I think is just kind of the perfect concoction for people to say, you know, like, oh, I actually didn't like that, or I liked this more, it doesn't deserve to win. I think that is. I'm like pretty confident that's going to happen. And I think it's already started somewhat, but
actually's are the funniest part of the season. It's like, no, I don't actually think that. This is what I think now.
It's always what ends up winning. And I think too, like if Barbie starts picking up anything, I think people can get really nasty about that. That will be something for sure. I think that the comparisons that are being made already, I'll just say, in terms of counting the wins that Oppenheimer gets versus Barbie, like we don't have to do this. Like we do not have to compare these movies. They
it's
are
not
too,
an electoral college.
They're know. Too great. Thankfully, because that's a broken institution,
exactly.
In the same way that the Oscars are, I suppose. But
and variety, you know.
Yeah. But yeah, we don't need to compare them. They're both great movies. Go read our reviews of them up on the site.
Yeah. Indeed. I think also too, people forgetting about films. I mean, I was talking with Sophia about this. It's like for 6 months out of this year, nobody could shut up about Past Lives. Like it was the great masterpiece of our time. And I don't want movies like that to be forgotten about either in these discussions when they get to it. I mean, like when you talk about The Zone of Interest, you talk about, you know, The Boy and the Heron, because, you know, people need to learn how to say that correctly. Heron, you know, but then there's, you know, there's Priscilla. There's,
wait, what were you saying? Heron?
People were saying Heron all the time.
It was a plague at the New York Film Festival.
It was a plague. It was, you know, it was just terrible.
And Toronto.
Yes, but there's so many great movies this year. It is such a strong year. I mean, I have a rule, and Eric and Sophia, and I think you know this, Christina. I don't give out 5-star reviews movies in a given year, and I've given out 3 this year just because those movies profoundly moved me, and I've rewatched them, and they're incredible films. I mean, but there's already even backlash even before a movie comes out. Like you think about Maestro, the nose controversy, the. When Bradley Cooper's talking about his preparation for the Illy Cathedral scene, and people are like, oh, he's really thirsty for an Oscar.
You know, it's, I love, like, it. Let's go back, like, yeah, to the 40s and the 50s. Like, we need the return of the diva come award, yeah, season. And if, exactly, it's going to be Bradley Cooper this year, I'm here for it.
That's good.
I'd love him to just, you know, be like, yeah, it took me, I didn't sleep, I didn't eat. You know, all I did was play music. It's like,
and anyone who thinks he's thirsty for an Oscar, go watch the clip of him on Howard Stern where he instantly said he'd rather, yeah, have the Eagles win a Super Bowl.
But that's, is, I mean, that is, at the end of the day, the most diplomatic choice for him to say, because, yes, he's a 9-time totally loser.
He probably also believes it.
But yeah, so, yeah, the pre-set-in hate for Cooper and Maestro has been pretty strong for a while. Yeah. And it's, you know, the whole hiding behind makeup and makeup performance and stuff. And people have a lot of things to say about things they haven't seen. And I do think also we have so many outlets that really like taking parts of quotes out of context, using it as a headline and stirring that pot of hatred. Because we saw that just happen with Cooper and Maestro multiple times, yeah, where the context of a quote is completely removed and sections, yeah, of it are removed. So it sounds much worse than it is. That's kind of the bread and butter of these places. And it's unfortunate.
Let's dive into looking at Oscar nomination predictions. I'm going to follow your lists here on Awards Watch. Let's wait with Best Picture till the end. Eric, why don't you guide us into what your thoughts on for Best Actress, and then we can discuss and see if anyone has a different opinion. Ryan's looking nervous over there.
How long do you have? He's going to be here the whole rest of the show.
I'm telling you, Best Actress, which, you know, is already always the best category because it just is especially juicy and bloodbathy this year. And it's funny because it's really only, I mean, 10. There are like 10, maybe 11. But they're all in an astonishing place to be in the top 5. And we have just begun with critics and with that rollout, and if we'll see sweeps starting to happen. Lily Gladstone's win at Gotham for Unknown Country, I know, and saw a lot of comments about the how and the why that win happened. But I mean, if you can't look at it at least with a slightly academic eye and not purely on a cynical one, there's a lot of logic to that win. There's a lot of reasoning behind it. It also dismisses that somehow isn't a good performance, right, and it's just a really stupid thing to say. But then you know, she picked up the New York win for Killers today. And that could be her, the beginning of a path for her. I think that it will be. I've felt like that for a while now. And she got to give two speeches at the Gothams, both of which were absolutely fantastic. People will want to see and hear more from her. And that's kind of a, that's a part of all of this too, is not specific with actors, but like kind of with anybody. Engaging a room, really great speeches go a really long way to groups wanting to hear more, reward more. But yeah, this category is going to be extremely, extremely difficult because major, major performances are going to miss no matter what. And I mean, I hate to keep bringing Nyad back, but if Benning remains in, and I have her right in the middle at three right now, there are going to be so many people that are so angry that she's in over whoever else it might be. Greta Lee, Fantasia Barrino, Margot Robbie. I mean, it's anyone that Benning replaces, people will be mad at. I don't think anybody's going to be mad really at Gladstone or Emma Stone or Sandra Hüller or Carey Mulligan once they see her. The press
those
tour
are your
for
top
the Color
five at the moment, right?
Those are my top five right now. The press tour for The Color Purple, now that has been seen, has been pretty extraordinary. Really just amazing audience reaction and Q&A's. Really, the one I went to earlier this month, never really seen anything quite like it. It was like being in church. that room was absolutely on fire. And that was before the cast came out.
Right.
So, you know, Barrino is a major player. Natalie Portman should be at number one. She really should be.
Incredible. Yeah.
I would actually switch out. I'm going to Annette Bening for Natalie Portman in your five. That's what I'm going with today. So Lily Gladstone,
I would love
Emma
that.
Stone, Natalie Portman, Carey Mulligan, Sandra Hüller.
Netflix has gotten an actress in here like every year for the last 5 years or something like that. And once they got two in. So I think it's possible. I want to mention Kaylee Spaney for Priscilla because there is a statistic that is extremely in her favor, and that is, as an English language Volpe Cup winner, missing an Oscar nomination, that just doesn't happen. It hasn't for like 20 something years. It's really, really major. But look at the year that we're in, and it's not and Olivia Colman in The Favorite performance. It is a very quiet performance. And when you have that compared to what we have here, it could be really tough.
How about you guys? Sophia, Ryan, thoughts on Best Actress here?
Yeah, I have Lily Gladstone at number one, and I also have for a while. I think there are a couple of reasons behind this. I think that the first is that even people who don't like Killers of the Flower Moon, they signal her out as like the, they single her out as the best part of that movie and like their anchor for the experience. And I think something I've learned over the past few years, in particular with the Oscars, that not in this case, because I love this performance, but in other years around picture or other key wins, is that people want to vote for something, right? Like they want to feel good about who they're voting for. It's how political elections work too. And it's how it works here. And people will feel good about voting for Lily Gladstone. I mean, it would be a history making win. She gives these fantastic speeches, like you were saying, Eric. And I think it'll be easy for people to gather around her. Like she is a presence that when you are around her, or when you see her both, you know, on screen or on stage in front of you or on your TV at home, you feel something. And that's like, that's not something that you can say for some of the other performers here, even though they're major names and give fantastic performances. I also have Emma Stone in Poor Things. I have Carey Mulligan in Maestro. I have Annette Bening for Naiad. And my fifth spot is hard because I actually bumped out Sandra Hüller, maybe against my better judgment, but I don't trust this branch always. I always come back to the Being the Ricardos nominations, these kind of louder movies and performances that get in. And I'm wondering personally, like, who that fifth spot is. I think I would love for it to be Natalie Portman for May December. This is one of my favorite performances of the year. Right now, I actually have Margot Robbie for Barbie, just because of how high Barbie is across my other categories. I don't know if that's necessarily a wise decision, but that's where I'm leaning now, because it just doesn't make sense for the lead of the movie to be missing from a category necessarily if it's in so many other places. But again, I think I can see that changing as the year shakes out, and I'll be paying attention to the Golden Globes, which is a weird thing to say, but I will be, just to see how that category goes for comedy musical actress.
I actually have the same five as Sophia. I have Lily Gladstone winning this Oscar. I think that it's, when you look at it in sort of the map for Killers of the Flower Moon, besides a couple of tech wins that it could upset Oppenheimer in, this is the best, most confident place that it could be for a win. And I just think that anytime Lily Gladstone's walked into a room, they've had conversations about the film, it's all centered around her. This is her movie. And, you know, it doesn't mean that Leo and De Niro aren't, you know, going to get nominated either, but it just feels like, it just feels like, as of right now, it feels like she is front and center stage for this movie. And I think that'll play really well. I have the same five, but I have him in a different order. I have Carey Mulligan at two. I think that's such an all-encompassing performance. You talk about Netflix having two. They have three actresses that could get in. And I think that actually, sadly, hurts Natalie Portman, because I think Maestro is a stronger contender. And as much as I love Natalie Portman and would want to kick Annette Bening's performance into the sun, and so we didn't have to, you know, consider it. I have her
into
there.
The Taj Mahal.
Exactly, right in there, and lock the damn door. But then Emma Stone, that's such an incredible performance. There's just no, that's probably the big loud performance of the year, if you know, because there's just so much physicality and everything to it. And I do have Margot Robbie, and for the exact same reason Sophia said, I don't see a world where Barbie, you know, gets a bunch of nominations and Ryan Gosling's the only acting nomination that it gets. I feel like those two Gosling's a supporting actor, but they're the face of the film. I think he'll get in for sure, and I think she will as well. And so, but if someone's vulnerable, I mean, maybe it is Bening, because she's not an across-the-board contender. I mean, Fantasia's obviously right there. You mentioned Kaylee Spaney. I mean, there's Sandra Hüller, but I feel like, again, Anatomy is, she needs to win a ton of critics prizes. She needs to really start showing up in some of these things, because that movie is not going to get into international. So it's really an uphill climb for it. You know, I would love to see Greta Lee in Past Lives get in. That's a performance that we don't see the Academy really in this category recognize a lot. It's very subtle, but it's very beautiful. But it's just and then there's like somebody like Anjanue Ellis Taylor and Origin that I think is absolutely incredible. But yeah, I mean, it's such a stacked year. But right now I have Lily Gladstone winning. I think it's, at this point, it's the right person in the front of that category.
Sophia, go ahead. No, I was just going to say, why don't you take us into Best Actor? But you maybe had something you wanted to add.
Oh, well, you know, Best Actor really is a perfect segue for me. I get to talk about one of my favorites, my longtime favorites here. But what I was going to say about Lily Gladstone, too, is that in a year where we have a sweep And it's really early to say that, but I could see it shaking out this way where critics and all of these bodies want to give it to her. It's hard for fringe contenders to make their case and I think to creep in. So I can maybe see that hurting some of our contenders if she does indeed sweep. Okay, actor. Well, I have Bradley Cooper winning for Maestro.
As do I.
Think it's time. I'm scared to say that because I get so burned when I get attached to particular people and, you know, especially people that I care about and whose careers I've been following for a really long time. And I was pulling for him so hard to win 2018 for A Star Is Born, and he lost in the most painful way possible, really. So I'm always afraid for something like that to happen to him again. I think some people are just kind of unlucky when it comes to the Oscars, Paul Thomas Anderson being another favorite of mine who has horrendous Oscar luck. But I have Bradley Cooper for Maestro. Glenn Close. Oh, God. Yeah. Oh, at least she lost to someone good, though. Right? Like Olivia Colman was good, at least. But yeah, so I have Bradley Cooper winning for Maestro. I have Cillian Murphy for Oppenheimer. I have Leonardo DiCaprio for Killers of the Flower Moon. I have Paul Giamatti for The Holdovers. And then for my last spot, it's so this the 4-5 spot, I kind of have three people who I'm like rotating in and out. And I'm going with Jeffrey Wright for American Fiction because I think that that movie is going to be big and people are going to really like it. And if they like it, they have to like him. And I thought he was great in the movie and really funny. And I'm not like the biggest fan of the movie, I would say, but I thought that the strongest points of it were Jeffrey Wright. I think he's amazing. And definitely someone, and I hate using this word normally, but I'll say it for him, like overdue of Academy attention. That leaves out Colman Domingo for Rustin, which that is such an Academy friendly movie, but I just don't know where else it's going to show up. Maybe original song. But in that case, it's hard for me to say, you know, putting him in against five people, I think, whose movies will be stronger top to bottom. I wanted to put Andrew Scott in, but I really just need him to win somewhere. And I just
want to put Andrew Scott in.
Yeah. he'd be my personal pick, I think, really, of a performance that would win here, but it's just not happening. So that's who I have right now.
So, Eric, you don't have Paul Giamatti in, and you do have Colman Domingo in.
I do. This is a category that is actually pretty exciting and pretty fun. But unlike Actress, which has 10 or 11 real contenders that could go any way, Actor is not bleak, but there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I think there are 7 performances and that's it. Anyone else, and they're all the names that that Sophia's already named. It's just moving the chairs on the Titanic. I don't see Zac Efron or even Christian Friedel or Anthony Hopkins kind of making some type of
Eric, that was the last session for Freud. I mean,
that's it.
What the hell?
I know. He's got another Holocaust movie next year. He can.
Oh, that's right.
He can hold off. He can hold off.
That's right.
So it's really tough because last year we saw for the first time in 84 years all first time nominees here. It was an absolutely extraordinary thing that happened. And it didn't need to, but it did because voters wanted it to. They could have gone along with Tom Cruise at some point somewhere, but nobody did. And we got Paul Mescal instead, and we are better for it. Here is a slightly different story because we're going to have previous nominees and winners that are really in play, as well as first timers. Colman Domingo and Andrew Scott, both openly gay men, playing openly gay men in their first lead roles. That alone is historical. if either of them get in, because it's only happened once. Ian McKellen is the only openly gay actor playing a gay role. But generally, we see gay roles, LGBTQ roles, get nominations and wins all the time for, I mean, actors at least that say they're straight. Whatever. We'll just leave that alone. So this year could really change that a lot. I think that's like a harder narrative to really kind of push than it is other types of things. And nobody's really doing that much. That isn't it's not been, you know, behind Andrew Scott that much. It's not been behind Domingo that much, other than it being their first lead roles. But you can't look past it. You can't really dismiss it. And I'll certainly be talking about it whenever I possibly can, because I think that context is incredibly important. But yes, we're looking at Cooper, Murphy, Domingo, DiCaprio, Wright, Scott, and Giamatti. And it's really only going to be a combination of those seven. Wright makes a lot of sense if American Fiction does rise in the ranks, as it looks like it is. It could also be a possible villain contender, I think, for some people. As well as the holdovers, people are already making allusions to both of those, and a best picture winner from a few years ago that was horrid, and it's a terrible comparison, so I won't even make it here.
But what are the allusions regarding the holdovers? I'm not following.
Yeah, because it's a terrible comparison.
Oh, yeah, okay. It's stretching, I think. People yes. are trying to, I think they're trying to find that villain, and they've fixated around the holdovers. And I think I could see American Fiction, like you said, creeping up into that. But yeah, if you think back to, yeah, a bad winner, particularly bad winner from a few years ago.
Okay, that one.
Yeah, yeah. But that's that
write
sort
it
of
down in a book. Maybe yeah. The book is green. Yeah.
But see, that harks back to what I was saying earlier, is that people take their personal opinions and start creating that narrative where, you know, a movie may be pretty well liked and really well reviewed, but if you don't, and you don't want it to happen, you're going to sort of create your own world where it is the bad guy, and it is going to be taking something from somebody else or whatever that is. And it happens every year. It's nonsense every year.
Well, I wasn't even aware of this burgeoning yeah. narrative.
Yes, both coming from nobodies and major outlets. So it's, they can't help it. People can't help themselves to talk honestly about any of this stuff. I think there is potential for upsets within this seven, and that's why I think it's really kind of fun and volatile, and that there's a lot of possibility. I've been bumping DiCaprio down kind of every month. It's not likely.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that he's getting snubbed, but strange things have happened. The focus is on Lily Gladstone, so it's not impossible. I wouldn't say it's logical, but it's not impossible. But yeah, I think the Jeffrey Wright, Andrew Scott, Paul Giamatti triptych are the ones that are really, really, really in concert with each other. Whether Domingo gets in or not, I think is a totally separate thing. But for some reason in my head, I'm putting Wright, Scott, and Giamatti kind of really on the same level. And two of them will probably make it.
Ryan, why don't you lead us into supporting actress and your thoughts on that?
Oh, I'm not even going to do actor. Okay. All right.
I
didn't talk about actor. It's fine.
Please talk about actor.
He's just going to say Cillian Murphy five times.
No, I have Bradley Cooper winning this. It's like I've seen the movie four times. It's like an undeniable performance. I have Cillian
and
Murphy.
The makeup. The makeup.
Yeah, it's the make. It's the better makeup actor winner than what we got last year, which was an abomination.
It'll be a makeup and a makeup win.
Exactly. And then I have, like I said, Cillian Murphy. I have Leonardo DiCaprio, because, you know, Eric mentioned that we all got five new nominees last year. And Paul Mescal's benefit was that Leonardo DiCaprio in that movie got pushed to this year. Otherwise, I don't think that he or Bill Nighy, one of those two, get into that category, because I do think Leo is, when he has a performance and it's in a big kind of contender like this, it's kind of like you just pencil him in. I'm not saying that he's in any era whatsoever, but it just feels like it, you know. And he got a lot of acclaim for this out of Cannes and throughout the year, from, even though I and others don't think it's like his greatest performance ever, there are a lot of people that do believe that about him as well in this film. And it is, in the way the Scorsese talks about it, it is a two-hander between Molly and Ernest's story, so you have to kind of take that as well with it. And then, yeah, I mean, I have Jeffrey Wright for American Fiction. I think that that's got, I mean, at this point, I think that's going to happen. The movie has won every audience award under the sun and is really popular. And so I expect it to do pretty well. And then, yes, Eric's right. There's like three performances. You kind of sit back and you go, okay, is it Paul Giamatti? Is it Coleman Domingo? Is it Andrew Scott? Right now, I'm just going to go with Giamatti. So I guess that's the same as Sophia's. I mean, Domingo, Sophia's right. Like, where does that movie get nominated outside of song? It would be really, really tough. You'd have to have that narrative. All the Strangers, it's such a good performance. Easily top three performance for me in this category this year. But I just don't know how the Academy will respond to it. And I don't know what they will do with it. And it might be one of those, sadly, those things that we as critics love that doesn't translate over to the Academy. And that would be a real bummer, because it's such a great movie from Andrew Hay. And all four of those performances deserve all the flowers in the world. But that's where I have my five right now. Though, I mean, Giamatti was in a pretty big film before with Alexander Payne. And he missed out on a nomination for, I believe it was like Don Cheadle got in over him. So, for Otawawanda. So, it's not out of the history to suggest that Paul Giamatti could get snubbed again, and get forgotten about, which, if the narratives start happening, but then also if like people forget about the holdovers because, you know, all the attention's to Divine Joy Randolph or to that screenplay, and it's not too Giamatti, you could easily see that just kind of falling by the wayside. So,
or that it's Giamatti giving a Giamatti performance.
Yeah. And Jeffrey Wright gets a better Giamatti performance. And
everyone's talking about fiction. Dominic Sessa.
American Fiction is a Paul Giamatti movie.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly.
It's a very, very clever.
Yeah.
In that sense. But when you're watching it, and then when you get to the end and realize what you're watching, you're like, this is a Paul Giamatti movie. Okay, got it.
For sure. So you asked about...
Hey friends, this is Jim Knight, former 21-year Hard Rock executive turned best-selling author and top 10 keynote speaker.
And I'm Brant Menswar, former frontman of Hollywood's most dangerous band turned top 10 motivational speaker and best-selling author.
We host the how-to podcast, Thoughts That Rock, where we talk to rock stars, athletes, CEOs, astronauts, and even next-door neighbors who share their expertise and opinions. Together, we tackle the most interesting and challenging topics of today.
Whether you want to learn how to become more confident, how to deal with anxiety at work,
or how to write a hit song, or use Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu in life,
we've got hundreds of episodes to help amp up your life and move you forward.
Subscribe to Thoughts That Rock wherever you listen to podcasts, and check out evergreenpodcast.com for more information.
I'm actually, just quickly before you can dive into that, I'm going to say I'm I have almost the same. I have Bradley Cooper, I have Cillian Murphy, I have Leonardo DiCaprio, Jeffrey Wright, and I'm actually going with Andrew Scott at this point because of the tears. Because I think very few people get out of this movie unscathed, and you remember those tears, at least I do, Eric, most of us do, for the rest of the season. And I'm thinking that that could be a factor in getting him in over a few of the others for this incredible performance that really breaks your heart. And so at the moment, that's where I am. Go ahead, Ryan, with the
supporting actress.
Yeah, supporting.
All right. I mean, I have Divine Joy Randolph at the top as of right now. I only have her at the top because I have not seen The Color Purple just yet, though I do have Danielle Brooks right there at number two. I will be seeing it very, very soon. So I'll be able to discuss that. And I think that they're in the right order. Yeah. Thank you. And I think that it'll be very interesting. Both of them have these big powerhouse performances that audiences have been sort of very attached to. They have these great narratives behind them. And they're in two films that they are the, when all the reactions to Color Purple came out, it was Danielle Brooks's name that was at the top of everybody's list. Same thing when we were at Telluride and throughout, is Divine Joy Randolph. So I have those two in there as of right now. I have Emily Blunt for Oppenheimer in there. I'm like kind of teetering back and forth on that. I think Oppenheimer's gonna have a big day, and I think that that's one that it could get. She has a very overdue narrative as well to not get an Oscar nomination, at least people think online. I know it's a very divisive performance and a lot of people like it, but especially Eric. You know, if you're Universal and you're listening out there, Eric Anderson at Awards Watch does not like Emily Blunt. But I think she'll get in because she's doing the Q&As with Cillian Murphy and Robert Downey Jr. everywhere already. She's campaigning. I think that that'll be to her benefit to be around those two actors that I do think will get nominated. I'm going to take, as of right now, I'm going to take Jodie Foster and Nyad. I don't like that movie. I'm on the record about that, but I think Foster's really good. And I said this a couple of years ago when The Mauritanian came out, that we're going to get at a point where I think Jodie Foster will win another Oscar. I don't think it'll be this year, but it's just the further steppage to that. And then in my last spot, I'm throwing a Hail Mary out there. I'm going to do it because I can't get this performance out of my head. And Eric will love this. Right now I have Julianne Moore in for May, December. I just think that lift, it's going to go so far.
Masterpiece.
It's a special performance.
May, December.
The poor things. I think it's some of her best working years. It would be really sad if Portman missed out, but you know, Milton and Moore got in because that trio is really, I think the trio, maybe the trio of the year outside the Past Lives crew. But yeah, that's where I stand. I mean, there's a couple others. It's really kind of open, I think, after Randolph and Brooks for the rest of those three spots. So, and that's kind of great. You know,
America,
but then of course
for me feels like there's so much talk around
that could happen too. I'm not 100% there yet. But I mean, they mentioned her at the Gotham speech the other night. She is out there on the campaign with Robbie and Greta Gerwig at Q&A. So, they definitely are winning it. She's like there in the six or seven for me. Again, though, I would love like a Claire Foy for all of the strangers. Talk about a performance of her career, for God's sakes. And
Sophia,
Ryan and I have the same five again.
You gotta stop looking at each other's notes. This is ridiculous.
Yeah, I know. I was like, okay, third category here. I did have kind of a spicy pick at number five of Juliette Binoche and The Taste of Things, spicy, which I think could still happen, but I am just so obsessed with Julianne Moore in May, December and that performance, and feel like it is just so strange. And she's just an actress. I mean, she's, if not the best, one of the best actresses of her generation and kind of undeniable in terms of her talent and what she's able to do. And I hope that they can recognize that. I think there's something about, you know, the attention of that campaign going to Charles Melton right now, that could pull some of that away from her. But yeah, I'm putting her in. Jodie Foster for Naiad, she steals the show. I think America Ferrera for Barbie, what's interesting with her is that this is just, and I don't know why I have this feeling, but this is the type of performance where I can see it getting in at like Golden Globes and SAG and then not translating Oscar morning, where it's like all of a sudden Julianne Moore is there. And that's how the five shakes out. I also, though, like there's something about Emily Blunt in the back of my mind. It's like, what if she's one of those actresses that just doesn't connect? Again, that's a big what if, but I don't know. I could see it happening. I think, like you said, Ryan, Divine Joy Randolph and Danielle Brooks, those are the two that feel secure to me. And the rest, it's kind of just how I'm feeling in a particular moment.
Eric?
Yeah, I mean, I'm basically the same. I think it's a 10, 11, maybe 12 person. It's a pretty good batch of possibilities here. I am going to move Danielle Brooks up. I had her at 1 and 2 and all over the place the last couple months. And definitely she would be above Henson for me. I do have Nightmare Blunt rotation in. She is there.
Blunt rotation.
So... I mean,
that's what I'm feeling these days, a blunt rotation.
You know, I absolutely know I'm on the outside of most people in terms of her performance. But I can't let it get in the way of predicting her. It makes total sense for her to be in here. For November, I do have Foster in 5. I feel a lot less confident in that, but I think it's entirely possible for Foster to get in and not Benning. I think it's possible for Moore to get in and not Portman. Mm-hmm. I think it's possible for Claire Foy to get in and not Andrew Scott.
Well, she's also
not all categories are the same.
Yeah, Jodie Foster is actually playing the likable character in that movie, as opposed
a
crazy lady that'll be on the trail soon. You know what I mean?
In comparison, yeah. Oh, see, boy, if anything's going to do Benning in, it's going to actually be Diana Nyad or so.
Exactly.
Good Lord.
The water nymph.
Yeah.
In the shape of water. There you go.
Sure, if you say so, Diana. Oh, my God. But yeah, I mean, Foster is by no means a lock. Nobody's really a lock other than Randolph and Brooks. I think everybody else is very vulnerable. If the Zone of Interest is big with the Academy, then Hoehler has a chance. I think her chance at a double nom is very possible. Julia Binoche in The Taste of Things, it's really a co-lead, like really a lead.
She's great.
She's tremendous. Yeah. I don't think American Fiction and Amazon MGM have done anything to benefit Erica Alexander as a possible contender. She's not even a name on the poster, and she's an integral part of the movie and very good. I know a lot of people want Rachel McAdams to happen for Are You There, God? I actually just watched it last night for the first time on the plane home. Oh my God. Right. It is about as perfect an mm-hmm. adaptation as that book
it's incredible.
Ever could have hoped
it so
for.
Much.
It
and
is...
Rachel McAdams in particular.
Oh, she's so good.
Great. She's great. Everybody's great. Oh my God. All the girls are everyone's just like extremely well cast. I feel like it is one of those people want it to happen more than the reality of it happening. And I think the Gotham nomination really got people fired up that it would be a possibility. I don't feel like it's that much of a possibility. Viola Davis, Penelope Cruz, America Ferrera, maybe, sure.
Based off what Sophia said about Air, though, that ain't happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, right, Sophia?
It's been out for months and nobody saw it.
Oh, yeah. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. My Gotham table. No one had seen Air except for me. So they were asking me about it. It's like, yeah. Okay, wow. It's been out for a long time.
It is Viola Davis, and you can't underestimate her. And they are doing SAG screenings literally this coming week. So
but I mean my December list or my front runner Friday, depending on how I decide to do it, is going to look different than the list I have for November. Randolph will be at the top, then Brooks. I might put Blunt up to three. It's just hard. It's hard not to see, you know, how easy it is going to be for that movie to just get a dozen nominations.
Mm-hmm. Maybe more.
Shut up.
I mean, Florence Pugh's right there, right, guys?
You know what?
Oh, yeah.
I forgot about that, didn't you?
That would actually be the funniest Oscar nomination in history, I think.
What if Pugh got in over Blunt? That would be hilarious.
Listen, I saw somebody that actually put that as an official prediction, and, you know.
Well, they're not a serious person.
Choices. Choices.
There you go.
I don't know. So, yeah.
Randolph, I feel really Brooks, confident Blunt. About Julianne Moore, I have to say.
Really?
Henson. Oh, and yeah,
it is a very showy performance.
It's so sly and cunning and just meaty, and you think about it. And I mean, she's so good at playing us all. Or is she? Or is she not? Mm-hmm. And I think it's amazing. Mm-hmm. And she's so spectacular on the red carpet. And I don't know. I just feel really good about her.
Yeah, especially when she gives out her four favorites, and it's
I'm obsessed with her. Yeah, like, when I saw that, I was like, "We're the same, Julianne Moore and I."
I'm like, I want to watch a movie with you, lady. Good lord.
Yeah, for real. I'm gonna just kind of juggle Moore, Foy, and Foster for that fifth spot until I land on something.
Okay.
I'm worried about. I know we're only like a few days into this race, really. I am worried about All of Us Strangers a little bit. Losing all of its Gothams. Nothing from New York today.
Good change. It's a long season.
I'm a little worried.
That's okay.
I'm a little worried. I think it'll do well at BIFA. Do well there.
Might do well at LA.
Maybe. Spirit nominations are in 6 days. Yeah,
exactly.
I don't know. It's something kind of has to shift or happen, but it would be very Oscars to, you know, take the gay movie and put the straight actress in. That would be hilarious. Not undeserved. She's totally deserved.
Mm-hmm.
Sophia, then take us into supporting actor.
Oh, wow. This is a fun category.
Yes.
It really has, I think, fluctuated recently for me, like over the past few days. I think seeing my favorite performance in this category pick up some big wins has been really exciting. I want to try to keep that in perspective, though, as we head into the rest of the season, because I always get burned and my favorites win at critics. And then when the industry happens, that's not necessarily the case. So I'm going to go out on a limb and just put Charles Melton at number one, because that's how I'm feeling today. I'm feeling excited about this and I want it to happen, and that's fine. Hope Dictions, we're in the early stages. He has the wins and no one else does yet. So
manifesting Melton.
Manifesting, yes. Then I'll have I have Ryan Gosling for Barbie, Robert Downey Jr. for Oppenheimer, Robert De Niro for Killers of the Flower Moon. And in my last spot, it's so hard here what to do, but I'm going with Willem Dafoe for Poor Things. But there are a lot of options.
You're going with Willem over Mark?
Yeah, maybe unwisely, but I like Willem's performance better. And I feel that it's, I don't know, Ruffalo, I think, makes sense in a lot of ways, and that's probably the smarter decision. But I feel that Defoe, I don't know, there's a lot to that performance that I really like, and I personally prefer it. But I think, like, in those, that last spot for me, it's either Defoe or Ruffalo. I would love to see Dominic Sessa get in, though.
Counter, Ryan?
Well, we don't have the same five this time, so that's a good thing. Last year, there was a movie, it was called RRR, and in this category, for four spots, it's RRRR, because it's Ryan Gosling, Robert Downey Jr., Robert De Niro, and Mark Ruffalo are my nominees. And then I do have Charles Melton in there. I think that that is a performance that could easily get in here. They have really just turned that campaign into that screenplay in him. He, per Sophia and Eric, is the nicest guy in the world. And there is an energy to him that we can't talk about here on this podcast, because it might turn it into a very different show.
It would have to be behind a paywall.
Yeah, a big time paywall.
Sort of Saltburn-y.
Very Saltburn-y.
And a splash guard.
Yeah, yeah. There you go. I have Robert Downey Jr. still winning this as of right now. I think that this category is really going to shape up for the two actors that I think are the front runners, when Gosling and Downey. I think that that's when the telecast will be, and that's when you'll really see the sort of push. It's very early for this. I mean, obviously everybody loves Gosling's performance. De Niro's performance has been critically acclaimed. I actually think it's, in my opinion, the best performance in the film, and De Niro's extraordinary in that movie. And I think Downey, that's that career narrative that we've talked about in the past. He's very well liked. He's already doing the Q&As more than Gosling and De Niro. Obviously, they'll probably not put him at a Q&A because they don't even let
he
him want to talk
at
the
every
Gotham.
Q&A.
He should, but they're not. But yeah, it's going to change. I think that it's going to be a very tight race, because this might be one to open the path for one of these films to win Best Picture over Oppenheimer easily. Gosling's going to get recognized. So is Downey at the Santa Barbara Film Festival, and get a showcase there. So that'll be really great for them. Milton is somebody that I think that would just be such an inspired nomination too, because that is the supporting performance of the year. The only thing about Downey, I will say, is that the more and more you watch Oppenheimer, he's not the best supporting performance in that movie. There's like six or seven others that I love more, but that's also just because I love that movie. But you understand the game and the sort of the narratives for him that could happen. Same with Gosling, beloved actor, out of the box sort of performance too. Then he has the scene, which is I'm Just Ken. He has that, and they would love nothing more than to perform that at the Oscars if it gets nominated. So I think it's those two. But I mean, I would love Dominic Sessa to get in there. I would love Jamie Bell to get in there. I would love Holt McCallany for The Iron Claw, which is a movie that a bunch of people are just seeing right now, but he's tremendous in that movie. Obviously, Sophia mentioned Defoe. And then, of course, our beloved Paul Mescal for All the Strangers.
It's not going to happen, but Mescal 2 years in a row. Oh.
A double Mescal.
What a dream.
Afterglow nomination.
Sounds like a drink.
Yeah,
we can go back to the past and have Jacob Elordi nominated for Priscilla and Saltburn.
There you go.
But if those five got nominated for mine or Sophia's, I would think it would be a very, very good lineup in five performances that I think are tremendous. I think there's really not that many performances so far this year from the acting categories that I think are The Eyes of Tammy Faye or Judy, which are disgusting and don't deserve their Oscars. So, you know, or Rami Malek or Christian Bale and Vice, you know, that are equally disgusting. So, yeah. Or Jamie Lee Curtis. You know what I mean? So there you go.
Thoughts, Eric? After that little rant?
My goodness. I mean, I can't really disagree with most of it.
No. Thank you.
Although I really like Zellweger and in Judy, even though it's a train wreck. I still really like it.
Such a mess of a movie.
I have the same five, and I think I will have the same five for December as Ryan, different order. And to reiterate, my predictions are always twofold. I predict based on likeliness to get a nomination. Then once the nominations come out, then it's winner predictions. So if I have somebody at number one, it's not saying I think this person's going to win. I just think they have the best shot to get it. And I have Gosling at number one. I have Downey at number two. I'll move Melton probably up to three. And four and five, I will probably stick with Ruffalo and De Niro. I also agree. I think De Niro is tremendous in this. When his evil is restrained, he is much, much scarier. And that's why he's so effective in this.
Why doesn't Apple send us the goggles as like an FYC thing? Like
maybe because of that horrible Paramount Pictures tweet.
Maybe so.
What was that?
Somebody had made a tweet with a picture of De Niro with the glasses. And I don't remember what that tweet said, but it was a pretty benign tweet just about him and the performance and the character. And Paramount's like reply comment was he had to do it to him. I'm like, you mean murder hundreds of Osage? That's what you're saying. It was bad. It was bad news bears.
Somebody got
and they deleted
the phone
it.
Taken away from them that day. I'll tell you.
I'm telling you, these interns, what are you gonna do with them?
I know.
But to Sophia's point, I think Defoe absolutely could and probably should get in. He is so sympathetic in this. And you wouldn't know that until you see it, because he looks like a villain. He feels like a villain. But he's incredibly warm. And it's a beautiful performance. The idea of both Ruffalo and Gosling getting in for batshit comedic performances in the same year. Love it. Want it to happen. I hope it happens. I think Sessa is, I don't know if he's a spoiler. I think he's really only a spoiler if the movie is pretty big. But he's great. I love him in it.
That's Sterling when we'll know the holdovers maybe? Is something.
Yeah, I don't know what to do with the holdovers. Yeah. It's like
a Golden Globe.
It feels like it
could take so many things if it's that.
It feels like four nominations or eight.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It'll probably be like six. You know what I mean? Right in the middle.
Yeah.
Well, I've been reading that all the screenings are full. Audiences that weren't going out, the sort of older audiences that weren't going out last year are all at the holdovers. So
yes,
if the Academy is back in that mode, then it could be a big year for that.
The ones that did not die the last 3 years are going out to watch the holdovers.
I
think it'll play well later this month because it is a Christmas movie and families want to go see some. I mean, they're not going to want to go see The Zone of Interest at Christmas or maybe,
well, you know, there's it also because it's Focus Features, which is
unless
Universal and the way their platforming has been the last couple of years, it's gonna be or wait no it already is on digital as of the 28th.
Yeah, that's the other problem with
right as its box office kind of builds and builds and does well, and I know a lot of people really hate that. They don't like that format at all. It's like 17 day window.
Ridiculous.
But I mean, from a business perspective, it's really just about money. That's $20 a pop. They're still making money. And plenty of people won't do that. They won't do a pay-per-view VOD style. They will go to the movie. So I think it is a movie that will be benefited by both ways to view it. Sterling K. Brown. Again, if American Fiction is the player that some people think that it is, there is a format and a path that kind of has to be taken. And that's, picture, screenplay, and supporting actor. And that's kind of the one that we've seen. I don't see really him being able to break in here, though. He hasn't. What's he going to get? Is he going to get SAG? Is he going to get Globe? I don't think so. Coleman Domingo, he's at the bottom of my list for Color Purple. Danny Glover did not get in for this role. I think what Domingo does is much more and much better and much scarier. And, you know, he'll have Rustin as a side comparison of range for the same year. Weirdly, thinking about supporting actress, Jodie Foster will have True Detective season 4 3 days after the start of Oscar nomination voting, just to have that out there. But yeah, outside of that, I know people are trying to make Glenn Howerton happen. It's not going to happen. It's not.
Interview him all you want. It ain't going to happen.
No, I mean, you definitely don't want a bad interview out there, because
no,
that
you don't
really do a lot of damage. But I mean, come on, it's IFC. I love IFC, but they have a really hard time with like real campaigns.
Yeah. I like the forgotten channel on your cable package.
It's like Bleecker Street for fancy people.
Exactly. It's, you know, Bleecker Street for DirecTV users. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah. There's Peter Sarsgaard from the world famous Ketchup Entertainment for Memory.
Well, he did win in Venice.
He won Volpe Cup for Best Actor because they don't have supporting, but you know.
Ketchup Entertainment.
Ketchup
Entertainment. That's a real thing.
I'm just going to keep saying that. Makes, you know,
more of
makes me wonder if we have enough hot dogs.
There you go.
Ryan, why don't you take us into the screenplay categories? Go with adapted.
Oh, adapted screenplay. Okay. Well, obviously,
I'm pretty sure I know what you have at number one.
Well, number one, I have this movie called Oppenheimer. And then this little movie called Oppenheimer. And then it's really just a placeholder for now. I have Poor Things, Killers of the Flower Moon, American Fiction. And then that fifth spot really is wide open. I do think that, you know, maybe that's just where All of Us Strangers gets its love. You know, maybe, you know, like some of the ding dongs online are thinking maybe that's where Spider-Man goes, you know what I mean? Into the Spider-Verse. And which I doubt that that's going to happen, because the first one didn't do that. And they didn't do that last year with, you know, Del Toro's Pinocchio. And so I don't see that happening. And, you know, Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. I'd love that to get in there. I doubt that will. I don't think that it's very hard for a musical to get into adapted screenplay. And if Tony Kushner couldn't get in for West Side Story, I have a hard time believing that The Color Purple is going to get in at this moment. That's only if, you know, if they just really, really love the film. Right now, I have The Zone of Interest from Jonathan Glazer. Again, that is it's probably not the best pick right now, because just like Eric, I'm a little worried about Zone of Interest. I'm worried about it because, I mean, we're two award shows in and it's been blanked so far. And that's not a good thing. No, that could change easily. It'll most likely be the winner for international feature at this point. And so I think that, you know, when we talk about director, we might be talking about it again. But yeah, I'm just going to not confidently put Zone of Interest right there. Cause I think that fifth spot can go to, you know, it can go to a variety of things at this moment. What I'd love for The Killer to get in there. I think that screenplay is phenomenal and hilarious and totally up my, you know, what I love. I mean, I know that some people might not be a fan of what I'm about to say, but I really loved Ferrari you know, that's not going to happen though, because Neon can't even push Anatomy, let alone push Ferrari, even though they paid $60-70 million for it. So I think that 90. That's kind of, or $90 million. Sorry. See, it gets worse. So yeah, I'm going to go with those five that I think are Eric's five, actually, at this moment.
Eric?
Maybe I'm wrong.
For adapted?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, wait, actually, I think he has Strangers in there over his own.
Yeah, so. Yeah. I'm my adapted doesn't make as much sense as it really should when you look at my picture and director. But here we are. Yeah, my November is Oppenheimer, Poor Things, Killers, American Fiction, All of Us Strangers. And then I have Zone right at sixth. I feel actually very good that that will be the six contenders vying for five spots. Spider-Man, no. Taste of Things, no. Are You There, God? No. Priscilla, outside shot. But anything outside of those six, I would be really surprised. It feels very, very competitive. And I do think this could be like the only place that Strangers lands and ends up. And I think it's, you know, because everything is done by Branch. If the Branch knows the source material and how much of an adaptation that it is, that's what can get it in.
Sophia, do you differ?
Not really. I mean, I don't have a winner yet or like a front runner in this category, because I think this category is pretty interesting, but I'll call out that Killers of the Flower Moon and Oppenheimer in particular, a lot of the attention around the screenplay has been really interesting. Like Scorsese has talked a lot about how they really changed the script and adapted it a few times and refocused the narrative away from what it's focused on in the book, right? It's a whodunit in the book. He completely changes it to be about the marriage. And the Oppenheimer script also is this like first person point of view. If you actually read the script, it's really interesting how it's constructed and put together and uses, you know, a lot of like first person language, which is really interesting and different. So I have those two, but I do have American Fiction as a potential spoiler in terms of like a possible winner here. Ultimately, it could happen. I could see it down the road. So I have that actually at three behind Killers and Oppenheimer, which are right in the one and two. Then I have Poor Things, and then I have All of Us Strangers at five. This just feels like the classic screenplay pick. Like this could just be its one nomination and it's where they go for it. And again, I think it's a really thoughtful and strong adaptation. I would also, you know, I wish Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret could make it in, because I think it's a brilliant adaptation and it's such a well-known source material as well. But yeah, I think those five for me feel pretty solid. And
I think American Fiction, I would feel really good about that. It feels like Cord is a writer. He's written for Succession. He's a journalist. It just feels like there's so much momentum for the satire of it all. It feels like something that would really go well.
Yeah. And it's funny. It's also, it's about writing too.
Exactly.
So you can see writers really, really liking that in a way. So yeah, I think American Fiction could be really strong here.
Sophia, why don't you just go on to original while we're at it?
Yeah. So for original screenplay, one of the things, so I know that Barbie, right, there was all of this like, will Barbie be adapted? Will Barbie be original? And they can always go rogue, but I've kept it an original. So I have Barbie, The Holdovers, I have Past Lives, Maestro, and Anatomy of a Fall. Let me correct this for a second. These are my old predictions that I didn't update yet. I'm going to take out, I'm actually taking out Maestro and replacing it with May, December.
I would do that too.
How did I forget my favorite movie of the year here?
Eric?
That's my top five too. Barbie, Holdovers, Past Lives, Anatomy, May, December. And then Maestro's right there.
Maestro's right there, yeah.
Which is crazy because the script for Maestro is so gorgeous and layered and dialogue-y. But I think writers are going to, you know, watch it and feel like the overlapping dialogue and all of the scenes are really more of an actor's thing than it is a writing thing.
And of Maestro, like the criticisms I've seen of that movie are almost all screenplay related.
Can we just say another incredible fight scene?
I love it.
Between the couple and in Anatomy of a Fall, there's some really juicy fights between
that. That's enough for the nomination right there, is that scene.
And Ryan?
I differ on just one from my colleagues here. I have Barbie and I have the holdovers. I have past lives and I have May December. I do not have Anatomy of a Fall in as of this current moment, and I have Maestro in. Mm-hmm. I think that based off this week, I know it's like you were not trying to take too much into this week, but also too, I just tried to figure out like, okay, as much as that movie was super strong, it felt like when they picked the taste of things, there was a deflation a little bit with what are they going to do with this? And so I think the safer bet, and A Star Is Born, which is a movie that screenplay isn't particularly, I think, the greatest thing about it, that got into original screenplay as well back in 2018. Obviously a weaker year in that category, but it is a stronger Best Picture contender, Maestro. And I think that Anatomy of a Fall right now is, it's just six. This is the vulnerable one on the outside. But I do have May, December, Barbie, The Holdovers. I don't know, you know, again, it could change with Barbie too. The Academy might at the last second change it and go to adapted, which would then lock up that category, I believe, with the five nominees that it would have. And sorry, all of us strangers. And then we'd have a really interesting debate as to who's going to win that category. But I mean, I would personally, if this was my five, I would love nothing more than for Celine Song to win that Oscar. I think that that screenplay, talk about taking something so personal and making yourself so vulnerable to tell that story. It's an incredible piece of writing. And yeah, that's one that, I mean, like, you know, I know that Barbie's the front runner and it will probably win this category. And I'm so happy for Greta, even though she should already have an Oscar because that son of a bitch for Next Goal Wins already has that other one for her. But I think that, and I would love her and Noah to have it. It's such an achievement, Barbie. But for me, I love Past Life so much. And that's kind of like also, too, I think about it a little bit of just like some of the best written films of the year. And I think that there's so much about Barbie that I love, but that screenplay for Past Lives, that vulnerability is there from the beginning and it doesn't work without it. So, but it would be a great category. I mean, you guys talked about those six, but I mean, you know, obviously Saltburn, you have to kind of keep an eye out for that because of Emerald winning this category a couple of years ago. I don't know if that's going to happen. It's interesting that Origin got put into an original screenplay position, considering that it is about essentially a woman making a book, that it was a bestseller. So that was kind of interesting. Air, Asteroid City, you know, those are movies to kind of keep in mind as well, but I doubt it because nobody's seen Air. But Wes Anderson, you're also going to just, you know, the Academy likes Wes Anderson. So, but they haven't in a while. So, yeah, I think that's where I stand.
I think one of the things that will probably keep Anatomy of a Fall in for me is that the writing branch the last couple of years has really, really embraced non-English language or multi-language nominees.
That's true.
In a way that's starting to become close to a trend. I mean, you know, we could have a situation where Anatomy's only nomination is here. That's possible.
I mean, same with Zone and Adapted. You have to consider that as well, too.
Yeah.
Eric, get us into Best Director.
Oh my gosh. Well, I mean, I could probably just go off of the
top. Just go off your noggin.
I would be hard pressed to not have Nolan at number one, keep him at number one. It is a directorial achievement that, you know, it's pretty undeniable. And even if it hadn't made a $950 million, it would still be that. And, you know, he's finally broken through with this branch. So there's, you know, no reason to think that is not going to continue as his work continues and elevates. Scorsese, basically the same thing. I I don't see a scenario in which he misses here. Then I think it's a little curious where we go from there. But also talking about, you know, Nolan and Scorsese and Killers and Oppenheimer as absolute, you know, defaults is the kind of thing that can get us into trouble sometimes. Because once we dismiss the idea of somebody being snubbed, our blinders are on for when it happens, because it does happen sometimes. So I don't ever want to get into hardcore lock territory conversations until much closer to the end. But you know, even then you start to see the cracks sometimes, and then you're like, oh, okay, that makes sense. So yeah, Lanthimos and Gerwig are 3 and 4. Not sure about the order quite yet. And I will probably stick with Jonathan Glazer for the Zone of Interest. Probably. Again, because of the evidence that we have of the directing branch for non-English language films. Does it tie into Best Picture and then nomination there? Maybe, probably. But I feel pretty good about it. Although
Bradley's direction was so good.
I think Bradley Cooper should be here. It's crazy. It's his snub for Star is Born is horrific. No, but you have to look at Alexander Payne and Cord Jefferson as possibilities. Although I don't think that a lot of directors will look at Fiction as a directorial achievement the same way as writing or acting.
No,
doesn't mean that it can't get in, though. He could still absolutely get in. He's fantastic on the campaign trail right now. He's a great conversation and exuberant and happy to be there.
Sophia?
Yeah.
You have Bradley, right?
I don't, but I'll tell you why. This is me hedging a little bit, and like I'm rooting for him, so I'm not putting him in because I want to be surprised and happy if it happens, because I absolutely think he deserves to be here. I think it's an incredible directorial achievement. It's a major directorial flex. And I was talking to our friend Kevin Jacobson yesterday about Bradley Cooper, and he's totally going for this Redford Warren Beatty look wherever he's doing these Q&As, like the glasses yeah, the sweaters. It is very similar. So I'm here for that. And I want it to work out for him very badly. And I'll say, I mean, like the people that I talked to when I was at the Gothams, who were, some of them were jurors, some of them were industry voters, like producers in particular, that vote for the Oscars, they loved Maestro and were raving about Maestro. So again, these are what, 3 people that I talked to, but still just worth considering, I guess. So I don't have him in. I have Nolan for Oppenheimer, of course. I have Scorsese for Killers of the Flower Moon. I have Greta Gerwig for Barbie. She's everywhere. She's getting these tributes. I know that people like being cynical about her and about this movie and that the directors won't go for it, but she's been nominated before. And this is a directorial achievement, and it made over $1 billion. I feel like, I don't know, she's worth recognizing here, and I think they'll do it. Then I don't know, it's just interesting. I have Lanthimos for Poor Things, and I still have Jonathan Glazer at 5, but I just don't know, because part of me kind of wants to put Justine Triet here for Anatomy of a Fall. I feel like they could like really just lean into the Palme d'Or, like they could just go for her here. And I think, you know, if they do like that movie, which it's still possible, we still have to wait and see, but it could happen. But those are my 5 for now, considering that pain could happen, right? There are a lot of possibilities, but yeah. Nolan, Scorsese, Gerwig, Lanthimos, Glazer.
You're 3 anecdotal people. My 3 anecdotal people I've heard about Yorgos, and that's too much fisheye.
Oh, I agree with them. I mean, I have to say, I've been hearing
so many positive things about Bradley Cooper, and in particular, almost more as director than actor, actually, for this one.
What if he wins? I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
I can't do that.
Ryan.
Well, for my five, I have Christopher Nolan for Oppenheimer and Martin Scorsese. Those are slam dunks. I get what Eric's saying. This idea of, like, you know, at this time, 2 years ago, we were like, Denis Villeneuve, that's in. I think this is a little different. I think it's a little bit different. I think that these two movies are made by, one, better filmmakers, but two, these movies are events. And I wouldn't necessarily, I would put these two movies on a bigger Academy-friendly based event for nominations and prestige and respect than something like Dune. And it's not to say that Villeneuve hasn't been, you know, nominated before by the Academy or anything. It just, you know, you hate to say things like it's their time, but it feels like this is a race between Nolan and Scorsese, and they have made their narratives pretty known. I mean, Nolan is out there with a $950 million 3-hour walk and talk biopic about a man with one action sequence that you know is still shattering records and people are still going to see for the 7th or 8th time. And then you have Killers of the Flower Moon, which is this grand epic from our cinema's greatest director, in my opinion. So I think that you have to factor those two in. I have Bradley Cooper for Maestro at 3. I think that it's going to happen.
Yay, I love it. Go for it.
I'm feeling it too.
But I'm scared.
I think that what I said earlier, I forgot to say that there was actually one movie that I have been thinking about a lot as a potential movie that could find its path to Best Picture, and that is Maestro. It can win some tech categories. It has a ton of Academy-friendly technicians working on this. It's pretty much got makeup, hate to say, in the bag, but I mean, like, when you release your photos a year before, you kind of got makeup. Mm-hmm. Costumes and production design is easily going to be in that category as well. And then Carrie and Bradley's performances speak for themselves. I think that this is such a directorial flex of a movie from Bradley Cooper that you cannot ignore it. Maybe you could ignore A Star Is Born, and they did. I don't think you can. And I think this is more traditional for them. And I think they like it. And then, the aspect ratios, the black and white, the color sequence, everything. And as much as there is that performance from Ely Cathedral, it is also the direction and the setup of all that. It is perfection. And
except
that just
for
screams.
One weird needle drop.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know maybe which one I'm talking about.
Yeah. though I love that needle drop.
Not weird, just obvious.
Yes. But then I have Jonathan Glazer at 4. Because I do think that, like what Eric said, that international branch, until they prove us otherwise, that is the strongest, to get us into something, and they, even like Eric mentioned, doesn't mean that it's going to correlate to a Best Picture nomination, because like Another Round and Cold War exist in that too. But when you have the clear international kind of front runner for the moment, that's the one that gets in. So those are very locked. For 5, I have Greta Gerwig. I have Greta Gerwig at 5 just right now. I think she's the strongest, probably 5 I have on the board. That's such a directorial achievement. I love Greta. I think she put her heart and soul into a movie that shouldn't have that much heart and soul, because we see so many films made by these giant studios or these giant properties that don't have the originality and the spontaneity of a Barbie. And Sophia's right. She's been everywhere. She was everywhere the other night.
And
in
the
New
first
York.
Female director to cross a billion.
Yeah, it's incredible. The only hesitation I have from the branch is exactly what Sophia said. I had to worry about a flat out comedy getting across the board appeal from them. I worry about that. It's not that I don't think that Barbie's not deserved. I just worry about that internally. Because, I mean, last year we saw where we had deserving women for Best Director, and they decided not to nominate them. And so I think you have the most deserving not just female director, but one of the most deserving directors of the year here. But this branch has gone out of their way to snub people that, I mean, and they snubbed her before, I thought, for Little Women. So I think that she's in the five spot for now. Clearly the strongest five I have. Lanthimos is at six. I do feel like that movie is falling down the list. And then I think it will fall down the list a little bit more when people see it. I think that it is a lot of movie to handle, and it's not as across the board contender and accessible to me as something like The Favorite. And so Eric's cat's in the background, but yeah, so that's where I have it right now. I have Mr. Nolan, Mr. Scorsese, Mr. Cooper, Mr. Glazer, and the one and only Greta Gerwig.
We've been going on now for a while, and wonderful Ryan, I see that you're, I'm so happy you
I'm
here,
fine.
Even though I figure you, but let's
I'm
do,
on a lot of drugs, folks.
We're going to do,
nomination talk is keeping him going.
But I think we'll save the rest of the categories for the next time and do a part two, but let's do Best Picture to round this up. Sophia, take it away.
Okay. So I have Oppenheimer as my front runner. I feel like it's like, I don't know. It's not really wise to have anything else at this moment in time. Just feels right. I mean, it's a huge, huge movie. I'm seeing it again next week for another event, but it'll be my first Q&A for the movie. So it feels like a new experience. And it's IMAX 70mm, so I can't turn it down. So I have Oppenheimer. Then I have Killers of the Flower Moon. I have American Fiction. I have it really high, just because I know, like, I don't have the path figured out yet for it to win, but it just feels like something that people will like and they'll put really high on their ballot. And I have Barbie. I have The Holdovers. I have Maestro, Poor Things, The Color Purple, Past Lives, and Anatomy of a Fall.
Was that 10?
Yes. I have, so a couple I have missing, which I have, May December is right there for me because I have it getting into a few categories, but I don't know. It's one of those where I'm just not sure about how it's going to land. I hope it gets in. I think it can, but it's just, I'm going to need to see more before I put it in. The Zone of Interest as well. That's one that's right there for me. It just depends on whether or not Glazer gets in. But right now, I really only have it at international, Glazer. And if those two actually pan out, Picture, I think, makes sense for it. But yeah, those are the 10 I have right now. I still don't feel good about Past Lives, really. That's like totally a hope diction.
Eric?
It's funny because I had Past Lives in for months and months and months. And then the Zone of Interest eclipsed that as, for me, the more likely A24 film to make it in, because they cannot get two movies in a single year. Even when really nothing should have been in the way for The Whale to get in last year, it absolutely should have gotten in. It got a PGA nomination and it still couldn't get in, and it had the Best Actor winner. That's crazy to me. So I kind of bit the bullet last month and put it back in. So I had both Zone and Past Lives in Best Picture, but near the bottom, very near the bottom, because it does still feel really unlikely. I have Oppenheimer at the top as well. It's such a strange thing having it. It's not a winner prediction, but for a movie like this to win would be really odd. It would be the first Best Picture winner with no festival run since The Departed. And there's a reason why some trends turn into just easy to call, because they just keep happening, and festival runs are really big parts of Best Picture. Killers had one, really, just the can. That's the one main. Barbie didn't have any. So we're kind of in a really neat place with Best Picture this year, where we're going to have massive blockbusters and independence. It's one of the things I love about having 10 Best Picture nominees. I definitely think it should only always be 5 or 10 and not like the weird 7, 8, or 9 that it had been. That's really stupid. But I think once like nominations come out, then, you know, we all sort of do the, well, if there had only been 5, this is the 5 it would be. I have Oppenheimer, Poor Things, Barbie, Maestro, Killers, American Fiction, The Holdovers, Zone of Interest, and Past Lives, and The Color Purple. That's November. I think I will probably stick pretty close to that right outside. Then I had Anatomy of a Fall, The Strangers, May, December. I don't see really anything breaking in past that. Iron Claw, Rust and Air, Naiad, Saltburn, Napoleon, Boy, no. I don't see that.
Napoleon. That
Napoleon.
Knocking in there. I don't think that's
Napoleon,
happening.
Napoleon, good Lord.
You're so great because you have boats.
Destiny has brought me to this port trip.
Where is that screenplay nomination? I think I'm going to move. I think I'll move these numbers around, the placements around. But it probably will stay this. You know, we've got Spirit Awards nominations, and that whole week and that couple of weeks are going to be the onslaught of Critics Awards. And if we start seeing any type of patterns take place, then, you know, then we'll have some fun. Then we'll have something to talk about.
I have Oppenheimer and Killers of the Flower Moon. Then I have Maestro, number 3, and then American Fiction, Barbie, Past Lives, The Holdovers, The Color Purple, Poor Things, all the way down at 9. And then, you know, I said fuck it. Because I think this might be the year where we get the director nomination and it doesn't correlate into Best Picture. So right now at number 10, I don't have Zone of Interest. I'm going to put May, December in there just for some fun. And I know for a fact Netflix can get 2 films into Best Picture as opposed to A24. And those are their 2 films that they're pushing the hardest. So I can rely on them to circle the masses and get that movie, which I think is astonishing.
But you don't have The Color Purple. Turn.
I do have The Color Purple. Did I not say that? Yes, Color Purple's in. It's like at 8. I think Color Purple will get a good amount of nominations. I don't think it'll get like a ton. It's not a 10 or 11. Like, you know, I think that it's going to be a really great, it's a great year of movies. It's going to be really great. Like if that lineup that I just read, or Eric or Sophia read, Christina, if those are our 10, and outside of The Color Purple, all 10 of those movies are pretty good to not great. And I don't have and it would be maybe the strongest lineup we have in a long time. And even stronger than something like last year, because last year still had Triangle of Sadness in it. So, you know, nothing's perfect. You know what I mean? So, but it seems like we're getting pretty close to that. This Academy is starting to have more and more taste, which is nice.
Nice.
Well, when it comes to nominations, not necessarily when it comes to winners.
Well, we're doing a nomination show here, Sophia.
Yes,
we're not doing winner
predictions. I know. I'm just saying, don't praise them too much just yet.
I'm not.
We'll get to that.
Nah, they'll screw it up somehow.
Guys, it was so good to see you again. And thank you so much for coming on the show. Sophia, tell everyone where they can read all your great work.
Yeah. So you can find me on Twitter at Sophia_Sim, Letterboxd with the same handle without the underscore. You can find all of my written work, so reviews and interviews and some podcasting at Awards Watch. And then I have my own show as well, Oscar Wilde, where you can find me at Oscar Wilde Pod.
Ryan?
You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd at Ryan McQuaid77. You can find all my work at awardswatch.com. While you're over at awardswatch.com, you can do a couple things for us. We'd really appreciate it. One is you can sign up for the newsletter that Eric puts together that he may or may not put out twice a week. Just depends on his schedule. The other thing you could do is listen to our two podcasts, the Awards Watch podcast that's released every Monday. And then you can listen to Director Watch, which is released every Thursday. At least it should be when Eric posts them. And
you're giving Eric a lot of shit over
here. Yeah, because he didn't. Well, it's because he didn't post today's. But if you want, you go over to iTunes, Spotify, give us 5 stars. And yes, please go read all of our great interviews. We've had a ton of interviews up on the site. Sophia's had some great interviews. I've had some great Eric, the whole team. We're very proud of everybody. We're very proud of everybody over there and all the work that we're doing. We're very blessed to be able to do it. And Christina, thank you so much for having us on, as always.
And Eric?
Well, I mean, that podcast should be up by the time people are listening to this. I got home at 2 in the morning last night. I am trying. I am still in my pajamas.
It's an excuse.
Give me a break. Give me a break here. Christina, thanks so much for having us on. I really look forward to seeing you again. Hopefully before Telluride, it would be fantastic.
I think so. I think that's
what's gonna happen. Our paths could cross before then. That would be amazing. You can find me at Twitter at awards_watch and everywhere else without the underscore. You can find me clinging to life on red carpets throughout Los Angeles. At awardswatch.com. Lots of stuff. The season is here. So I will not be getting sleep, but who needs sleep? Sleep is for the dead.
And you guys can follow Pop Culture Confidential wherever you get your podcasts. I have a bunch of interviews up there as well. And on Twitter at Christina Biro and Instagram the same. Guys, thank you so much. See you very soon. Get tucked into bed, Ryan. Have a NyQuil.
I'm fine. I'm fine, Mom.
Thanks, guys.
No, thank you. Bye.
Thank you, Christina. This was so fun.
My name is Cindy Burnett, and each week I interview at least 2 traditionally published authors on my podcast, Thoughts from a Page. We talk spoiler-free about their books, so you can listen whether you have read the book or not. And then we delve into things that you most likely won't hear about anywhere else. The importance of the cover design, why they included various aspects of the story, personal details about both the books and the authors' lives, and so much more. You can find the podcast on every major platform and learn more about it on my website, thoughtsfromapage.com. Thanks so much for checking it out.